This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, let's get into the smart stuff straight away then. Strap in, prepare for liftoff. Let's head through the universe in the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan, hello, I hope you're good. It's been a busy week in the world of science, by the way. A spacecraft has travelled through the atmosphere and back again, new planets are forming, and a schoolgirl has been nominated for the Nobel Prize. We'll talk more about that in the show, by the way. Also on the way, you can hear how one creature at the bottom of the ocean stops other fish from stealing its food. We'll chat to a biologist all about gene editing, and I've got some shout-outs and questions to answer in a sec after we catch up with our alien friends N and G and see how their journey back home to space is going.
N and G's Meet a Motivator.
Hey, N and G, I need some energy expertise.
At your service.
So, what's up?
You guys know I'm working really hard to be a smart meter motivator. I get how saving energy and preventing waste is important. But how is a home smart meter? Well, it's smart. Is it like a supercomputer with a brain that can do a million calculations an hour?
It's much simpler than that.
Okay. Could it be a world grandmaster at chess?
Smart meters are too busy to play chess. Come on, let's find out more. Whee! We're deep inside the pipes and cables, which bring energy into the home. Coming up to the smart meter now.
Here we have it. Smart meters take the place of the old meters and measure all the energy used in the home.
Wow. Does that include the energy I use to run up and down the stairs?
I'm afraid not. Just the stuff that comes through the pipes and wires.
So this smart meter is in the same place as the old meter. Just smarter, right?
Sure is. It communicates with the power companies using radio waves, so Gran shouldn't have to take a reading ever again.
And there's more. Come on! With your smart meter, you'll get an easy-to-read energy display that you can place anywhere around the house.
Gran's friend Kathy has a smart thermostat to turn the heating on and off. Is that same thing as an energy display?
No!
The energy display can't make any changes to the heating or turn anything on or off. It simply communicates with the smart meter and shows you exactly what's been used. Go on, check it out!
So I get it. It's showing how much gas has been used today, this month, and this year. And electricity too.
Have a good look around. Poke away!
I can see how much the electricity costs and what's being used at this very moment. And I definitely can't turn anything off by accident.
No chance! If you want to turn things on or off, you still have to get up on your feet and use your fingers.
This is cool. It's easier to use than a mobile phone. Gran and Grandad would love to see what they're using, because they hate waste. Did you know? She's got a drawer of wrapping paper of old presents. She even irons it.
Supremely sensible, Earthling, if you ask me. And the colossally clever thing about this display is that by seeing your usage, it can help you find out which appliances are guzzling the most energy.
Yeah, and shows the difference it can make when we remember to turn the lights off.
So now you know more about smart meters. You can be a meter motivator. Time we were off too. Watch out. Looks like we're going to fuse, G. Time for us to pop.
Here it comes. Woohee! I love a bit of fusion. See you, kid.
Bye, N and G. And thanks.
Here it comes.
Find out how you can be a meter motivator with N and G. With support from Smart Energy GB. Find out more at funkidslive.com/energy.
Question time. By the way, if you've got something sciencey that you want answered in question time, it's dead easy. Just send it my way as a review over on Apple Podcasts. Either I'll do the research for you and I'll explain it all, or I'll get a specialised expert in that field to come on and to sort it out. Right, let's start today with Bobby in the USA. Hey, Bobby. Thanks for leaving a review over on Apple Podcasts. You ask, why is blood red? It's a nice, easy one to start this, Bobby. They're red because they're filled with red blood cells. And red blood cells contain a protein called hemoglobin. And the protein binds iron and oxygen in your body. And when light is reflected through something that's oxygenized, it becomes red. So that's why it's red. Thank you very much for that. Let's have a bit more of a tougher question now from... Oh, Banana's brother. Hey, Banana's brother, who asks, how do scientists know that a meteor hit the Earth and killed the dinosaurs? Well, to be honest, Banana's brother, they don't, officially. It was so long ago, 66 million years now, that they can never be sure, but they do have a strong theory. Scientists, they know that a large asteroid or a comet up to 81 kilometres wide struck the Earth in Mexico. They can see the crater of it right now. It's called the Chicxulub Impactor. That's what they've called the asteroid because it's near a place called Chicxulub in Mexico, and it left this huge crater in the Earth. Now, the date it struck coincides perfectly with the time that experts predict a huge climate change caused a mass extinction. Now, the theory is that as this meteor burned through the Earth's atmosphere, it cooked so many creatures just with simple radiation, really. Also, the dust that would have been thrown up into the air as the asteroid hit the Earth, sent up all that dirt and grit into the sky, it would block the sunlight, which caused a sudden temperature drop that lasted for ages. Volcanoes would have erupted, sea levels would have changed, and they think that this caused the dinosaurs to become extinct. All that happening, and they can see the crater in the Earth where they think the asteroid hit. So there you go, a slightly more tough question there from Banana's brother, but we got the answer in the end. So if you've got a question that you want answered on the Fun Kids Science Weekly, you need to leave it as a review over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. So I saw a headline on the internet the other day, which absolutely terrified me, right? It says, the most worrying thing about gene editing is that it's really easy. And that kind of lit so many fires in my brain, you know, what really is gene editing? Why is it easy? And why should we be worried about it? So to help us figure all this out, on the line, we've got biologist Nessa Carey. Hey, Nessa.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm really well. Thank you so much for joining us. So let's start, basically, as simple as we can. What is gene editing?
Okay, so every organism on the Earth, from bananas to bats, from bacteria to humans, we have a kind of script, which is our genes, made from DNA. And what gene editing is a new technology that means we can directly change that genetic script. We can change the letters of our DNA alphabet really easily, and we can do it for any species on Earth. So we can start changing the script that underlies all organisms on this planet.
Now, I understand that as an idea. I get it as a concept. But in practice, I'm a little confused by it. What does a gene look like? Because to edit it, surely you need to see it on the screen to be able to tamper with it.
Well, genes are tiny, microscopic. You could never see them even with practically any microscope. But we have ways of being able to tell what our genes are. We have ways of being able to do what we call sequencing them, because our genes are made up of these repeating structures that we can think of like letters. So our genes are basically like a giant book within all of our cells. And we have technologies so that we can find the exact bit of an enormous book. Like if you just wanted to change one word in all of the Harry Potter books, gene editing means that we have ways now that we can find that one word really quickly and we can change it to whatever we like. So it's an amazing technology.
And what is the technology? Like, how does it see? How does it look inside the book of my person, if that kind of makes sense? What is it like? Am I sitting in an X-ray? Are you rubbing something on my arm? What's going on?
No, so we can get the gene editing into the cells of organisms, because all organisms are made of cells. We can get them in by packaging them up in very harmless little viruses that basically will carry the gene editing materials into our cells. And then there's a component that acts like a search function. It finds the right word by scanning all the DNA. And there's another component that acts like a pair of scissors and can chop the DNA. And those are the basic principles in gene editing.
So when you say a component, these are like almost chemicals in our body that's searching things out.
That's what we would do. We would put these chemicals into our body, but it's not like, say, taking a painkiller or an antihistamine or something. It's much more precise than that.
Now, when we take, when we kind of ingest, or however we were to take the virus, does it kind of find all the genes, or does it only do a few, and then our body kind of does a lot ourselves?
So it will only find the genes that it's basically the same as. It's like if you wanted to change the word Quidditch in all of the Harry Potter, the gene editing reagents, they'd only find the word Quidditch in the Harry Potter. They'd only find the right words to change. So in the same way, in our genes, you just put in a little sequence into the viruses, a little stretch of something very like our own DNA, and it will just look for the bit that it matches. It's a bit like finding the right piece in a jigsaw.
So that's what happens when it's in our body, but what about before it gets there? How are you editing it? Before we take in the virus, is it on a computer screen? Is it a bit like playing a game? What's happening there?
Well, we know what the DNA script is of lots and lots of organisms now. So if you looked at humans, our DNA script is very big. It's 3 billion letters. So what you do is on a computer, you find the bit that you want to change, and then you chemically manufacture the little piece of almost DNA that you put into the virus. So you chemically make that and you put it into the virus, and then when that virus gets into the cells, it will just be able to scan along our DNA and find the one bit that matches.
You say on a computer, is it like a software that I could download online?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, access to the entire human genome sequence is freely available to anybody who wants it online. And actually access to the sequences of hundreds of organisms. It's just available online. So
what?
You just find the bit you want.
So what do you mean? When I look up the human genome sequence online, what will I see? What will be staring up at me?
You'll see an incredibly long sequence. Our genetic alphabet only contains 4 letters. These are called A, C, G, and T. And what you would see is 3 million of these. So it's not an easy book to read. It's about, 40, 50 times the length of all the Harry Potter books put together.
And it's, so those 3 million, that the sequence of 3 million, is that...
3 billion.
3 billion. Is that just what's in me, or is that what's in the whole world?
That's every person in the world has 3 billion letters in their DNA alphabet. But we don't all have exactly the same 3 billion. Most of them are pretty much the same, but a few of them change. And that's why you and I look different, for example.
And it's the variation of those that determines how we're different.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
So let's talk very, if we can, about how we can edit genes to do things. Is there a limit in what we can, what humans can do thanks to their genes being edited? Like, could we really become superheroes just by placing A, C, T, and G in different variations?
Oh, I wish we could. I'd love to be a superhero. That would be so fantastic. But no, it's not going to be like that. Most things, like how tall you are, what you look like, how smart you are, those are influenced by your DNA, but they're also influenced by your environment. Like, did you get good nutrition? And even the bits of it that are controlled by your DNA, it's not that there's just one piece of your DNA that influences things like that. There may be hundreds of different bits of your DNA that influence those really complex things about humans. So we're not going to make super smart, super fast, super big humans by gene editing.
What can we do with gene editing then? What's the point of it?
Oh, the point is we can do loads of stuff. So with humans, we think we'll be able to use it to cure certain diseases that we really can't treat at the moment. We can also use it in crops so that we can, for example, create rice, which is more nutritious and which can grow even in soils which have become quite damaged through agriculture. But we can also do really just fun stuff, like investigate basic things in biology, like why butterflies have particular colours in their wings and particular patterns. It's being used for all sorts of applications.
Why is it an issue then? Why, when we talk about gene editing, do people get so up in arms and get so frustrated at ethical and moral issues that this presents?
There's kind of a range of reasons. Some people don't like the idea that we interfere with the DNA of other organisms. They think it's basically very wrong. But I think you have to remember that humans have done that for thousands of years. That's why we have things like tame dogs and cattle who will graze happily in fields, and we get lots of meat and milk from them. So some people just object to us interfering with the DNA of other organisms. Some people are worried that it will be unsafe. There isn't that much that suggests that this technology is going to be particularly unsafe. And what people really worry about is if we change the DNA of humans, and then those humans, if they have children, pass on that change, that means we've changed our genetic alphabet forever in those particular humans and all their offspring and all their descendants. So some people get very worried about that.
I started this chat by reading a quote: the most worrying thing about gene editing is that it's really easy, and that's from you. Why is it worrying?
The reason it's worrying is because most technologies that are very powerful are quite complicated, and so only a few people or a few organizations can use them, and you can usually detect if organizations are using them. Gene editing really isn't like that. You only need a fairly basic laboratory setup, and you don't even have to be particularly skillful as a scientist to do it. And the reason that that's worrying is if people start using it for irresponsible reasons. So, for example, there's been a scientist in China who has created babies who have been gene edited, and everyone's very concerned about that because they will now pass on that DNA change, and it's really not clear that it was a good thing to do in that particular case. There's also a theoretical risk that people could use this same technology to create things like superbugs that might create new dangerous infections that we can't fight.
It sounds exactly like the plot of a movie that is the end of which is that the world is destroyed. Well, brilliant. You've got a book. It's called Hacking the Code of Life. Thank you so much, Nessa Carey, for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly to tell us.
It's been a pleasure, Dan. Thanks very much.
Hello there, I'm George, and I'm here to tell you all about the Fun Kids Download. It's a podcast you can get from wherever you get your podcasts. This week, I'm joined by animation royalty, not actual royalty, but the stars of How to Train Your Dragon 3, plus author Anne-Marie Howe, who's chatting about her brand new book. If you're lucky, you might even get a yes-no game. That is the Fun Kids Download. Get it from wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, for this week's Dangerous Dan, we're headed to the very bottom of the ocean to meet a creature that hasn't changed in 300 million years. Let me introduce you to the hagfish. Now, it's not tremendously deadly to us because it lives so far away, but what it can do to other animals is devastating. It's long and thin, like an eel. And its head is where things start to get deadly. Its nose can sniff out the sweet smell of death. It instantly knows when there's a decaying creature nearby, and it wants to pick up the pieces. Its mouth is like something that belongs to a Doctor Who alien as well. It's kind of like a really ugly and evil vacuum cleaner, kind of. It's kind of like a food mincer, actually, which churns through and grinds down the bodies of animals that it finds that are dead. And the inside of their jaw is covered in teeth, which rips it apart as it goes down. Now, the hagfish can go for 3 months without eating, so when they find food, they need to make sure it's theirs. And this is when things start to get really cool. When they spot a dead creature, they sweat out slime, they secrete it into the water around them. And when that slime gets into other predators' mouths, who are nearby, who maybe want to steal the food, it squashes their mouth shut. It acts as kind of like a super glue. It blocks their gills so they can't eat anything. The prey then just belongs to the hagfish. It's a truly brilliant creature, a proper scavenger of the sea. Right, let's get your gadget questions answered by our geeky guru. This is Technomum.
Technomum, engineering explorers.
There's a new skate park in town with tons of ramps and even a half pipe. If you ask me, there should be one in every town. Imagine how cool it would be if you could build a house with a skate park inside. Instead of stairs, you could have a ramp and you could use the half pipe as a bedroom.
You might have a problem with things staying put. What with all the slopes and curves?
Typical engineer.
Sorry, it's certainly an interesting idea, and thinking about better ways to build buildings and the cities around us is something a particular type of engineer gets very excited about. They're called civil and structural engineers.
Civil and structural engineers? Sounds kinda serious.
Well, building safe and pleasant places to live in is a serious job, and I bet you've tried your hand at it already.
Really? Are you sure? I think I'd remember something like that.
Whenever you play with Lego or build incredible structures in Minecraft, then you're a civil or structural engineer. choosing the right bricks or materials for the jobs, and experimenting with different designs to see what works best. Civil and structural engineers know how to make different kinds of structures in a way that makes them safe, steady, and energy efficient, and able to do all the jobs that are needed. After all, if they're building a tower block, they need to make sure that the foundations are strong enough to support its weight. If it's a bridge, then they'll think about how many people might be using it and how heavy the loads on it will be. They need to understand how building materials behave so that they can choose the best ones for the job. It's a role which involves a lot of computer technology, although civil engineers often go out to the sites too to check the building works for themselves. They can give advice to people about the best way to adapt existing buildings, like converting an unused warehouse into flats. Even more exciting is that civil and structural engineers use technology in incredible ways to make smart cities.
Whoa, smart cities? That makes it sound like the city's alive.
It's much simpler than that. To create a smart city, civil engineers use technology to collect data about what's going on. This data can be used to help make things run more smoothly. Maybe they can make traffic lights go green to speed traffic up, or help planners devise better timetables for buses and trains, or turn streetlights off when there's no one around.
You're always telling me to turn my lights off when I'm not using them.
Well, it's for the same reason. Leaving lights on when they're not being used not only wastes money, but it also consumes electricity. And the more power we use, the more harm there is to the environment. Smart cities are more energy efficient.
Cool job.
There are loads of cool jobs for engineers. Almost as many jobs as there are inventions.
Like my skate park house. I think that could be a very cool invention. I just need to solve the problem of the sloping floor.
Now you're thinking.
Engineering Explorers, created with support from the Institution of Engineering and Technology to celebrate the Year of Engineering. Find out more at funkidslive.com/technomum.
It's time for this week's Science in the News. The Swedish schoolgirl who has inspired an international movement to fight climate change has been nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize. Greta Thunberg has inspired thousands of school kids all over the world to walk out of their lessons and go on strike against climate change. The Fridays for Future hashtag has caught on in Europe, Australia, and Japan, and it's hoping to force important people to do more about climate change and our future, really. Also, the value of the number pi has been calculated to a new world record length of 31 trillion digits. Emma Hiruka Iwao, a Google employee from Japan, found the number, which took 25 virtual machines, 121 days to complete. It's just churning through the numbers. Now, pi is a number which helps you work out the size of circles. It starts with 3.14, but it would take you 332,064 years to say the whole thing. It's 31 trillion digits long. And finally, Stonehenge was the site of the biggest parties in ancient Britain. Archaeologists found 131 pig's bones across the site, which points to the idea that people would bring food for gigantic feasts there. They would come from far around to celebrate national events. And that is it for this week on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. Remember, if you don't want to waste your time having to press download every week, go to your favourite podcast store, wherever you get your shows from, and click subscribe. That way, it will automatically deliver itself into your phone or your tablet every week. Now, if your favourite podcast store, by the way, is Apple, and if you've got a science question that you really want answered, leave it for us there over as a review. There's a little comment box at the bottom. Write it down there. Also, drop us 5 stars and write your name as well so I can give you a shout out. And then I'll find a proper genius expert to answer it for you in the show. Also on Apple Podcasts, it's one of the best places that you can hear all the brilliant Fun Kids science theories that we do. You can also get them on the free Fun Kids app and have a listen at funkidslive.com. And Fun Kids, we're a children's radio station from the UK, which you can listen to all over the country on your DAB digital radio on that free Fun Kids app and at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.